On the following evening, I was halfway through a busy surgery when a fat man in a particularly vivid tweed jacket bustled in and deposited a sad-eyed basset hound on the table.
"Shaking his head about a bit," he boomed. "Think he must have a touch of canker."
I got an oroscope from the instrument cupboard and had begun to examine the ear when the fat man started again.
"I see you were out our way last night. I live next door to Mrs. Mallard."
"Oh, yes?" I said, peering down the lighted metal tube. "That's right. Yes, I was." The man drummed his fingers on the table for a moment.
"Aye, that dog must have a lot of ailments. The vet's car always seems to be outside the house."
"Really? I shouldn't have thought so. Seemed a healthy little thing to me." I finished examining one ear and started on the other.
"Well, it's just as I say," said the man. "The poor creature's always in trouble, and it's funny how often it happens at night."
I looked up quickly. There was something odd in the way he said that. He looked at me for a moment with a kind of wide-eyed innocence. Then his whole face creased into a knowing leer. I stared at him.
"You can't mean..."
"Not with that ugly old devil, you mean, eh? Takes a bit of reckoning up, doesn't it?"
The eyes in the big red face twinkled with amusement. I dropped the oroscope on the table with a clatter, and my arms fell by my sides.
"Don't look like that, lad,"
shouted the fat man, giving me a playful punch in the chest.
"It's a rum old world, you know."
But it wasn't just the thought of Greer that was filling me with horror. It was the picture of myself, in that harem atmosphere, pontificating about pharyngitis against the background of body and soul to a woman who knew I was talking rubbish. In another 2 days, Angus Greer was out of bed and apparently recovered. Also, a replacement assistant had been engaged and was due to take up his post immediately. I was free to go. Having said I would leave first thing in the morning, I was out of the house by 6:30 a.m. in order to make Darraby by breakfast. I wasn't going to face any more of that porridge. As I drove west across the plain of York, I began to catch glimpses over the hedgetops and between the trees of the long spine of the Pennines, lifting into the morning sky. They were pale violet at this distance, and still hazy in the early sunshine, but they beckoned to me. And later, when the little car pulled harder against the rising ground, and the trees became fewer, and the hedges gave way to the clean limestone walls, I had the feelings I always had of the world opening out, of shackles falling away. And there, at last, was Darraby sleeping under the familiar bulk of Herne Fell, and beyond, the great green folds of the dales. Nothing stirred as I rattled across the cobbled marketplace, then down the quiet street to Skeldale House, with the ivy hanging in untidy profusion from its old bricks, and "Siegfried Farnan, MRCVS," on the lopsided brass plate. I think I would have galloped along the passage beyond the glass door, but I had to fight my way through the family dogs, all five of them, who surged around me, leaping and barking in delight. I almost collided with the formidable bulk of Mrs. Hall, who was carrying the coffee pot out of the dining room.
"You're back, then?"
she said. And I could see she was really pleased because she almost smiled.
"Well, go in and sit down.
I've got a bit of home cured in the pan for you." My hand was on the door when I heard the brothers' voices inside. Tristan was mumbling something, and Siegfried was in full cry.
"Where the hell were you last night, anyway? I heard you banging about at 3 o'clock in the morning and your room stinks like a brewery. God, I wish you could see yourself. Eyes like pissels in the snow."
Smiling to myself, I pushed open the door. I went over to Tristan, who stared up in surprise as I seized his hand and began to pump it. He looked as boyishly innocent as ever, except for the eyes which, though a little sunken, still held their old gleam. Then I approached Siegfried at the head of the table. Obviously startled at my formal entry, he had choked in mid-chew. He reddened, tears coursed down his thin cheeks, and the small sandy moustache quivered. Nevertheless, He rose from his chair, inclined his head, and extended his hand with the grace of a marquis.
"Welcome, James,"
he spluttered, spraying me lightly with toast crumbs.
"Welcome home."